This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Later in the show, Kennedy Heights celebrates its new cultural campus. Starting us off today, efforts to teach students how to navigate the world of credit, debt, budgets, and savings has improved a lot over the last decade. Still, many high school and even college students graduate with no real sense of how to manage money. Joining us to discuss the importance of financial literacy are Dr. Valerie Crew, Director of School Relations with the Economic Center at the University of Cincinnati, Brian Page, Outreach and Education Manager for Budget Challenge, the Road Test for Personal Finance, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Val, Brian, and Chris, thanks for being here this afternoon. Good to see all of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure this beautiful Friday, August 21st. It feels downright fall-like, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
And speaking of falling, that's what's happening
to the stock market
at this very minute. It just continues.
What's going on, Chris? I mean, it's been like days of turmoil on the markets.
Days of turmoil, and everyone is watching China. So people are getting up in the middle of the night, turning on their cell phone, and seeing how far the Shanghai market has fallen. It's down about 35% or so from its peak, which was just back a few months ago. There's just concern about what does the devaluation of the yuan mean? What's it mean for American exporters? When will oil quit going down? You would think that oil falling to $40 a barrel, which is where it is now, first time it's traded there since 2009, you'd think that that would be good, a good thing for people who theoretically will be paying less for gasoline and therefore have more money to invest in their 401ks and become more financially literate. But it's the fear of the unknown coupled with the kind of thin trading that normally prevails on weekends, ahead of weekends during the summer. There just aren't a lot of people to take the other side of the trade. So a little bit of buying or a little bit of selling in a thin market will sometimes have an outsized impact. And that's precisely what we're seeing this fine, sunny afternoon.
Should I panic yet?
No.
Okay.
No. Never. It's just not smart. And really, that's one of the things that's kind of exciting about having Brian and Val here, because you know, when people learn how to handle money earlier, they won't graduate from college with a real job or graduate from high school and start working and start saving money and then see a headline and freak out because okay. They'll understand, they'll have a context in which to put it. So that's why it's really a pleasure to have both of you folks here with us.
It is indeed. And Val, can you define for us, what does it mean exactly to be financially literate?
That has always been the $1 million question or the elephant in the room. You know, it's a journey. It's not a destination. It's something that I, as a grandmother now teaching my grandson, I'm becoming more and more literate in terms of technology and the way financial literacy can be taught through that venue, as well as with my own two daughters, et cetera. But the big, big tagline is life is about choices and choices have consequences. That's what we teach from kindergarten through grade 12. And our goal in financial literacy is to help students become informed decision makers. Because when you have the adequate and informative piece, you can make decisions, feel good about them, and then make further decisions from there based upon the choices that you've made.
And you're starting as a kindergarten?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. We, of course, feel that the high schools and colleges are a place to really ramp it up. But starting early, and with much more quality program availability is a tremendous key. And if it becomes part of who they are and part of their culture educationally, then what a better place to start.
Brian, how would you define financial literacy? The million-dollar question.
Well, I think she did a great job hitting most of the key points. If there was anything I would add, it's that it's not just about how you manage money. It's the emotions that you need to manage money well. I think Chris did a good job, you know, articulating the challenges that people face when they look at the stock market and they get pretty nervous. And people have those same kind of feelings when they manage their day-to-day expenses. And that's why we believe in what we're doing at Budget Challenge, because we're able to provide those kinds of opportunities for kids to not just make financial decisions, but also learn how to manage the emotions that accompany them.
What do you think the state of financial literacy is today?
Well, if you look at the FINRA studies, it's unfortunately really poor. They research what people know and how they behave. They research how much credit card debt people have. And unfortunately, when most Americans take that test, regardless of age, they fail it.
It is interesting, too, that in a world where short-term interest rates are still essentially zero, savings and checking pay very little, if anything, and yet there are people who have money in a bank account, but they have a credit card that might be charging them 8, 9, 10, 15, 20, 28% interest. And so how do you teach high school students or elementary school students the difference between how do you give them a framework on how to make these choices?
Well, I can tell you from my personal experience as an educator, and what we do with the simulation is first we want them to understand what is entailed with a higher interest rate. I think that's the first step is having the knowledge. But then they've got to be able to road test that and experience the consequences of taking out high interest loans. I think putting pen to paper is a good first step, and what we need to make sure we do is kids need to experience the pitfalls of high interest rate borrowing.
Sure. Now, this budget challenge, is this something that people can look up online, or do they have to be in your classroom? How does this work?
That's a good question. So we're an award-winning personal finance program. We make sure that kids use a learning by doing approach, and we put students in the driver's seat so they can road test what they're learning in class.
What ages are they?
It's high school.
High school.
So ages 14 to 18 or 19, depending on the kid. And we have a sponsored version with H&R Block where they're giving away $3 million in scholarships to the students who excel in the simulation.
Very nice.
So H&R Block Budget Challenge. And you can register for that at hrbds.org. And it's free.
Cool.
And you taught for a number of years before you went into this. And were kids more knowledgeable about money, or did you have to start with very basic information each year, about what were the attitudes like about money with the kids you were teaching?
Well, I think knowledge and attitudes are very different. So we always pre-assess and post-assess our kids to get a gauge on that. And I don't think a lot of that has changed. If anything, there's maybe a little bit more fear associated with money because these are kids who grew up when their parents were facing the Great Recession. So there's a lot of things that you have to help them through. I think that when I was teaching, one of the challenges that I had to face is a lot of the myths that surround credit. And that's a part of, I think, any curriculum and any standards. As an anecdote, this is foreign in a lot of schools, right? In Ohio, as Val can attest to. And one of the students who participated in our simulation told me at the end of school that she got a job because her future employer saw what she did in a simulation where she could prove that she was financially responsible.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And, that's interesting what you're saying, Brian, because we got an email from Shelby, and she says she graduated high school in 2006 and college in 2010.
During the Great Recession.
Right. And she says, in my time at either place, there were no classes that students took discussing personal finance, how to invest, the importance of it all. And she says, most 20-somethings I know have no idea about any of this. If you don't get any guidance from your parents or in high school or college, you're on your own trying to figure it out. And she says, I would say a lot of people don't realize how important it is until later in life or when it may be too late. So I think she's got a good point.
Well, she does. And I think of like three key things that that really we need to point out. And the first is that oftentimes one of the biggest financial decisions somebody's going to make, they make when they are in high school. And that's deciding whether or not to take out a student loan and the cost of that loan. And we know that, student loans are at an all-time high. And they're over $1 trillion nationally. Students are deciding whether or not to buy a car for the first time. And if they've never had a class in it and their parents aren't there to help, they really don't know what they're going through. And eventually they're going to get a credit card. And what's important about that is they're building their financial reputation right out the gate. And we need to start them off strong.
Yeah, certainly. It's interesting, too. You think about, Val mentioned five-year-olds. Think of what most people do with five-year-olds. It's their very first, they're in kindergarten. They're in the Bumblebee Soccer League. That's where you just kind of hover around the ball, or one follows the ball around, and you're taking them from activity to activity. But what kind of activities can parents of younger students, people in kindergarten, you know, K through two. What are the resources, Val, through the UC Center for Economics that are available for parents who want to move their kids a little further up the food chain financially?
Sure. There's this place called the Library that is free. It is jam-packed with children's picture books. There is not a picture book that has been written that does not have choice in it. Helping students realize that at a very young age, what choice could that rabbit have made? And what choice did he make? And what choices do we have when we go to the grocery store and we look at the foods that are there? What choices do we have when we go to a big box store and buy things? Making a much more concerted effort, because what the recession taught us was that we did not do a good job, as the email indicated, in terms of that particular generation. And it has also put it on the radar screens of grandparents, parents, educators, saying, let's not fall into the same hole with this next generation. And I think we have a much more of a neon flashing light that is pointing towards us. We likewise have the stock market game, which is a grade 4 through 12 iteration of a safety net where students are able, in groups of 4 to 5 students, to create a portfolio using $100,000 of cyber cash, which we all wish
not
we could
Bitcoin.
Do.
Not Bitcoin.
Not the real stuff. But no, this is cyber cash, and they have to invest in a minimum of 4 stocks. And let me tell you, at the end of the 10-week period in the fall and the spring, I would go to several of those students that are the winners and ask them what their tips were for insider tips, because they do their research. But just think, if you had the ability when you were in fourth grade to have looked at the stock market and understood the mystery of it that is mysterious to many, many, many adults. So that would be one great example of project-based. Back to what Brian said, it has to come through a project. A textbook can't teach financial literacy.
Hands-on, then.
Yeah, it needs to be hands-on learning, and it needs to be experiential. When my son was 6 years old, we were going through like an amusement park, and at the conclusion of that, you had to walk through the gift shop, strategically placed, right?
Of course.
There at eye level is a lantern that my son wanted to buy, and he insisted on it, and he didn't have his money on him. So I offered to lend him the money. I think it was $5, and I told him he had to pay me back $10. So I guess I'm a pawn shop, or I'm sorry, I guess I'm a
loan
predatory
shark.
Lender.
You're a
loan shark. Yeah.
Tony Soprano would be jealous.
So I lent him the money, and he got what he wanted. And then a couple days later, he wanted to go buy a toy for like $5, a little Bakugan. So I took him to Target. I let him pull it off the shelf and get in the line. I asked him where his $5 was, and he said, "Well, I had to pay you, five extra dollars because you lent me money." I told him, "Well, because of that, you can't get this toy, you know." And I took it back, and he's crying, and the mothers around me are looking at me like I'm the devil. But he's never borrowed money since. He's the lender for his friends, and he learned through an experience that you need to make informed decisions.
Well, Brian or Val, why do you think parents don't get more involved in teaching their children financial literacy? Any ideas as to why?
Well, it's a common medium. We have all had experience with money. It's the same thing. All of us have had an educational experience. If you don't feel good about what you've done with your money, it's hard for you to feel comfortable teaching your children about money. So it has to be a package deal. It's very important to keep parents in the loop and to respect them through the process, not to come in as a know-it-all and we can tell you how you should raise your child and how they should spend their money, but to come alongside, because we've learned through the center that when we teach children and the parents are present, the parents are listening and taking note just as intently as the child is. So it's that whole piece of information, 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 and there isn't a way that you can get too much on this subject.
Is it an outgrowth of the feeling that money is just something you don't talk about? You always hear people say it's one of those subjects that they hesitate to talk about it and think it's a no-no to talk about it.
Yes, and that's generational. I think that all of us experience that to one degree or other from our parents. And so we have to break that. And I think we're at a pivotal point in our economy where we can do that and people are listening.
It might sound like a dumb question, but is financial literacy something that is required to be taught in schools in Ohio, or does it vary from state to state?
So I can take that. It varies from state to state. There are four states that require it as a standalone semester-long course. We are not one of them. I was on the writing team for the Ohio Department of Education to write the standards, but unfortunately, they do not have to be taught in a standalone semester-long high school class. They can be embedded in other courses. So unfortunately, you have a lot of Ohio kids right now who are graduating and learning into the in the University of Hard Knocks, and they're making decisions and they're paying for each decision.
We will continue our conversation about financial literacy. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. It always seemed to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon, Dr. Valerie Crewe, Director of School Relations with the Economics Center at the University of Cincinnati. Brian Page, Outreach and Education Manager for Budget Challenge, the Road Test for Personal Finance. And Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. While you were talking about teaching kids how to invest in stocks, stock clubs, stock market games, these seem like they were popular about, 20 years ago, it seems like, but you don't hear much about them today. Are they still popular? Or?
Yes, very, very prevalent. We are the actual stock market game for the state of Ohio. It is housed at the University of Cincinnati's our center. we have about 3,000 teachers a year who utilize the stock market game or have over the last couple of years specifically in their classrooms. We feel that it's very much a part of the day-to-day. And the nice thing about it is that we do provide a competition where the students come to the university who are the winners and present their portfolios in front of investment relationship individuals that we have with the center. And once again, as Brian and I were talking earlier, presentation skills, a soft skill that a lot of students don't have that expertise or that available alternative. This is another way, which likewise, dovetailing off of what Brian said, language arts, math, social studies, science, and all of those pieces of curriculum have to be taught in a classroom. We like to feel as though our curriculum adds value by providing the content. So regardless if it's language arts, you can teach financial literacy. If it's math, you can teach financial literacy. Even science, because we're talking natural human capital resources. There is a place called iSpace on the Scarlet Oaks campus who do a lot of workshops with us. And we talk about how much does it cost to put one of those ships in space, and what is the opportunity cost of making those kinds of decisions. So it's not necessarily finding a separate curriculum and bringing it in. A, it has to be living curriculum, and B, it has to be curriculum that adds value, because the teacher's day is cluttered and cramped with things they have to do. So it adds a lot of value from that standpoint as well.
You know, it's interesting you talk about the different elements that would touch financing and, you know, science. Why would money be involved in science? Well, think of the cost to bring a new pharmaceutical product from the blackboard or from the test tube to the shelf or to the doctor's, to the pharmacy. It's millions of dollars, and there's big risk on the line. So one of the resources then that you have at the center is to kind of allow teachers then to help explain to students how those choices of should we send a man to the moon or should we invest in this particular drug to cure this particular disease are worthwhile.
That is correct. Back to the decision-making piece again.
Fascinating.
How costly is it, this lack of financial literacy that we see in society? What impact is it having on us?
Well, if you look at the millennials right now, a lot of them aren't borrowing money to buy a home or to buy a new car because they're, you know, really suffocated by their student loan debt. So there certainly is an opportunity cost to the ever-increasing cost of college. I think that some of the things that we're not seeing yet is what is the cost going to be for lower credit scores, right? I mean, when you consider what happens when you don't have a high credit score, you're going to pay higher insurance premiums, obviously pay more to borrow money if you can get a loan at all.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation, or you can email us at talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Val, you know, credit cards on campus, are they as prevalent as they used to be? I mean, that was one of the pitfalls. I remember when I was there, even back in the days I was going, that was something that you got hit with a lot. Here's a credit card.
Yes. As recent as 2008, those were still prevalent on university campuses, but that has now been eradicated.
Did they spray for it, or how did they eradicate
that's
it?
That's correct. It was a really potent piece of pesticide that we sprayed. Actually, you know, it was much more of a knowledge piece again, really thinking through handing a student a credit card that has no job. The average freshman in 2008 left the school year with about a $3,100 bill and were experiencing late fees, inability to obviously pay them even if they did have the money. And so fortunately, legislation took care of that in the state of Ohio, and that is no longer a possibility on the campus.
So what's a good way for a young person to educate themselves about credit? What kinds of things can they do to learn the pros and the cons?
I think it has to be a parent or a mentor, someone who comes across every child's path somewhere along the line at school to say, here, we need to make a bold step. We need to make a bold step towards informing and educating, not only in the schools, but a lot of after-school care programs. The Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, all of them have financial literacy components now. And I think it's important for us to all just work together and continue to network to find more and more inroads where we can make the difference.
I think it's great. You know, as you were talking, I just went back to my mind of my own financial career, starting with mowing lawns, pushing a lawnmower up and down the street, and then getting a job in a shoe store and delivering newspapers. And then you're always faced with a choice. Do I save it? Do I put this in the bank or invest it in something? Or do I spend it on that candy bar? Or do I buy a new snare drum with it? What do you do with it? So it really does come down to making these choices then. Are these things that students, the content that you have at the UC Center for Research and through your Budget Challenge, are these things that anyone can learn about, or do they have to be part of an organized program?
So at Budget Challenge, the teachers are equipped with material to help them teach about credit cards, and it's a part of the simulation. Students have the opportunity to understand how credit can impact their overall life because it's a part of our scoring model. And it's a great conversation starter, right? I mean, there's a myth out there that credit cards are always bad, and that's not necessarily true. If they're used wisely, they can be terrific credit-building tools if students understand what a utilization rate is and how to take advantage of it. If they understand the importance of paying their full balance on time every time. So I think it's just, as Val said, really it's a matter of education, and parents are partners in education. And as we all come together as a community and realize that in order to get kids off on the right track, we have to work together, I think we're going to continue to see improvement.
Great advice.
You know, you're talking about the savings, you know, save your money, go out, have a paper route, mow lawns, whatever, save money. The savings rate in the country, what is it, Chris? It's pretty.
Well, actually, it used to be paltry, and now it's gotten
better. It's
mediocre,
maybe.
About 4 to 5% now. It's strange because when there's no savings rate, people complain, my gosh, we're a nation of spendthrifts. But if the savings rate is too high, then people start worrying, oh, my gosh, the economy is... Two-thirds of the economy is consumer spending. People are saving and they're not spending. And this has been a problem in Japan, trying to stimulate the economy. People have been hoarding money. So it's just trying to find that balance between saving and wisely purchasing.
It's part of the whole financial literacy picture, though, to get people thinking about that balance.
Yeah, without a doubt. And let's separate saving and investing. So if you're talking about, you know, investing for your future for retirement, one of the challenges is that 30 years years ago when people started to work, they were defaulted into some sort of pension, right? They didn't necessarily have to be financially literate to start to invest for their future selves. And now, you know, most companies have a 401k that they have to default, they have to step into. They don't necessarily understand what's around the 401k and the parameters and what half of America is contributing.
Yeah, the burden of a comfortable retirement has been transferred from the corporate parent to each individual employee. That's been a major shift that started about 33 years ago.
Yeah, and that's a scary shift when you consider the power of compounding. If you're waiting until you're 35, 40 years old to invest for retirement, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, all the more remarkable that it's not a required course in every school across
yes,
this great
we all agree.
My way of thinking, it should be on par with math and science mm-hmm. and
yes.
English
mm-hmm.
and history. So
yes.
So what do we need to do, Brian? I mean, we've made some progress. Things are getting better. What more do we need to do to really advance financial literacy?
I think, first of all, it starts with mandating that it's taught in schools. Mm-hmm. And this is just my personal opinion. We need to make sure it's integrated as the University of Cincinnati does as they partner with schools. And we need to make sure that at the high school level there's a standalone class. And equally important, we need to train teachers because right now we're asking teachers to teach coursework where they might not have had any kind of training themselves and they might have had poor experiences themselves. And I've got to put a plug in for the center. That's where I really started to get my training at UC's Economics Center. And they're probably the best in the country. They do a great job for teachers in the area, and it's important to tap into them as a resource.
You ever get any success stories, former students you've dealt with in teaching financial literacy who come back and say, you helped me a lot. I did this or this or this that I normally would never have thought about doing.
Yeah, I get all kinds of stories, and they all originate from what Val was saying, just decisions where before they might have just instantly decided I'm going to do something, and now they pause and they think. As I mentioned before, it really meant a lot when I had a student at the conclusion of her simulation say that she got a job because she did so well in the simulation, because she could prove to her boss that she was able to manage her own money.
And Val, from your perspective, what more needs to be done to improve and boost financial literacy?
All the players need to come to the table. We are, of course, to do a lot of teacher training, a lot of direct service programming for students, but I don't want to negate the power of those after-school programs. Parents can't be there right after school to pick their students up, and having a variety of venues where financial literacy is likewise taught in those, in churches, and a variety, because the entire community can benefit.
Okay, so it has to be a collaborative effort to make this thing move forward.
That is correct.
Well, Val, Brian, and Chris, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
Dr. Valerie Crew, who's Director of School Relations with the Economic Center at the University of Cincinnati, Brian Page, who's Outreach and Education Manager for Budget Challenge, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And a reminder that the information provided on the show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. Coming up next, we'll take a look at the new Kennedy Heights Cultural Center. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.